So, last week we talked about the relationship between Agadata and Halacha. So now what we're going to do is take three approaches to how to understand Agadata. Maybe one more week on how to read it, and then hopefully we'll get into some Agadata. Maybe before Sukkot, definitely by after Sukkot. Okay? So, the Rambam, in his Hakdama to Perek Chelek. What is Perek Chelek?
Is the last parak of Sanhedrin.
Thank you. The last parak of Sanhedrin.
And it discusses Tchias HaMesim.
Correct. The first Mishnah discusses Tchias HaMesim, or really, the people who don't have... Well, we should be more careful. It talks about the people who have no portion in the world to come. Amongst those are people who don't believe in the world to come, or don't believe in the world to come, comes from the Torah, or whatever.
Well, so how does Tchias HaMesim have to do with world to come?
That too.
That's
amazing. That's
stuff.
The Rambam uses it as an opportunity to introduce the dogmas of faith, what become known as the Yugim Ikarim, which are summarized in various versions of the Animamins.
And Yigdal,
correct. I said various versions of the Animamins, Yigdal, all types of things. It's very nice. Now, in that context, he also has an introduction to Agadah. Why does he have an introduction to Agadah?
Because it's probably the biggest Agadah focus.
Good, because there is a lot of Agadata in Perek Chelek.
Is there any, like, practical halacha in there?
Well, okay, practical halacha, yom-yom, I don't know. But the end of the last three blot are halachic. It's just about Ir HaNidachat, which happens, you know, not so often.
Which is not...
I mean, it's halachic, don't get me wrong.
It's just also stated that it will never happen.
Correct, I mean, there's little things here and there, but... So, in that context, he introduces Agadah, and he tells you that there are three types of people and ways in which they approach Agadah. Now, the Rambam is sometimes a bit cynical, so you'll see that come through. He's also, at this point, barely more than a teenager when he's writing this, so, I don't know, you know, a bit of an edge there. I hope all of you, by the time you're the Rambam's age, which, you know, is something around now, have written a running commentary on all of Mishnah. I think he finished it when he was 25, so you got a few more years.
We have computers.
Hey, Yosef, you start now, you can make it.
He was one of the greatest writers.
Listen, Yosef, here, fine. Yosef, here's the deal. The Rambam already wrote a parish on Mishnah, so you just have to find a different book to write a running commentary on. Okay, whatever you want. It could be Tosefta, it could be Sifrei, I don't care.
Live tweet the Super Bowl, does that count?
No. Quite the accomplishment, but no.
What if we just publish notes you took in like high school classes in the comments?
How good are your notes? Okay.
We'll see.
We'll see. Depends how good they are, okay? Fine.
Also, I can find.
Now, the Rambam is very nice about this. So what do you think? If you had to divide the world into three groups and how they read Agadata, what would those groups be? Yeah.
I see one who reads it as like, this stuff is insane. This is ridiculous. I don't believe it.
Okay, that's group two for him. What else?
Literalists.
Good. Group one.
People who look at it as a muscle.
Good. Group three. Good. So here's the three groups. The first group is the largest one. I have watched them, read their books. It's written in Arabic. You should just know that, right? Perek Mishnah was written in Judeo-Arabic. I don't know Arabic. So the English translation, the Hebrew translation, is all a translation.
It will have to do.
What?
It will have to do.
Meaning, if you go and look at the Perek Mishnah that we have in Hebrew on the shelf, it's also a translation from the Arabic.
So my general rule
is I try to give you the original, but if the original was not Hebrew, then I don't feel compelled to give you the Hebrew, assuming I know the English is as good a translation as the Hebrew one that we have. Okay? That's my general rule. Right? I want you to read primary sources, but if we don't know the primary, okay, and most of you don't know Judeo-Arabic. Most of you. Maybe one of you does. No.
Okay.
When I have questions in Judeo-Arabic, I have my friends who know Judeo-Arabic, and that's who I ask. Okay. That's about it. Yeah. Right?
I don't know Judeo-Arabic.
I said most of you.
I
assume most of you don't. Like,
I do not know.
This guy, I worked under this guy, right, when I was in Toronto. No, Rabbi Karopkin, who translated this, right? So he knows Judeo-Arabic, hence he translated this. So when I have Judeo-Arabic questions, that's who I ask. Not Rabbi Yehuda Levi. If I asked him, that'd be very impressive. But no, I asked Rabbi Karopkin.
If you asked him, you wouldn't be able to understand what he said, because he'd probably respond in Judeo-Arabic.
Well, yeah, possibly. Yeah, he's great. We love Ray Kropotkin. He's wonderful. Okay. Anyways, so he says, the first group, I've watched them, read their books, heard about them. They accept the teaching of the sages in their simple, literal sense and do not think that these teachings contain any hidden meaning at all. They hold these opinions because they do not understand science and are far from having acquired any knowledge. They possess no understanding. Therefore, they believe that the sages intended no more than their deliberate and straightforward utterances than what they understand based on their own inadequate knowledge. They understand the teaching of the sages only in the literal sense, even though some of these teachings, when taken literally, would make even the uneducated, let alone sophisticated scholars, ask how anyone in the world could believe such things are true, let alone edifying.
So
the members of... One second, we have to get the insult down. One second. The members of this group are ignorant, and one can only regret their folly. Their very effort to honor and exalt the sages using their own meager understanding actually humiliates them. So let's just summarize for a moment. Group one are people who are literalists, not just literalists, right? What's the real problem?
Ignoramus.
They're literalists and they who think that to be a good firm Jew is to be a literalist. And therefore, right, all they want to do is be good from Jews, and therefore Chazal said it must be true as is.
So
and what is, and what does he say?
So Rome is saying that he thinks literalism is bad. I just want to say something recently, Super Rome is a rationalist, but that's only from one perspective, I'll say the more scientific perspective. If you look at it from a textual perspective, he's not a rationalist at all.
No, because rationalism doesn't have to do with how you read text, it has to do with how you think. He's not a literalist. No. Like, we should just define our terms. He is a rationalist in the sense that he judges things by the barometer of human rationality, right? He's not a literalist, right? He is a rationalist. That's exactly the point. Is he will read against literalism in favor of rationalism. He's very much a rationalist. It doesn't mean... Right, rationalism isn't always right. Rational reading, not a literal reading. A rational reading. Right, a reading informed by human reason. Right, not by the text, not by literalism. But that's exactly what he is. Okay, good. That's group one. But now here's the Rambam's real problem.
Are you actually like Hasidim who can read this unironically?
I don't read the Rambam.
Okay. Can we leave the snide comments to the Rambam? He did a good enough job, okay? No. Anyways, so the Rambam says that group one are literalists. But here's the Rambam's problem, right? The Rambam's problem is that these people think that they're being from. But what they're, but according to the Rambam, what they're really doing is humiliating Chazal. Because what are they saying? Chazal said these crazy things, and they must be true, and it must be what Chazal really meant. Right? So it's not only that they're not getting the truth, but by virtue of the fact that they're... Right, they're making Chazal look bad. Right? That's group one. Now...
Yeah.
So group two, according to the Rambam... That's not really fair. It's not actually true. Group two, for the Rambam, are also literalists. But... heretics, meaning people who think that Chazal were literal, but don't believe Chazal because what they see is what they get, and what they see is ridiculous, right? So there are two types of literalists, those that understand Chazal literally and think Chazal meant it, and think Chazal are right. Those are foolish from people, essentially.
And try to convince other people.
Correct. And then there's people who think Chazal meant it, but don't believe what Chazal said, and therefore... denigrate Chazal. That's group two. And he says, the second group is also large. When the people in this group read or hear the words of the sages, they too understand them according to their simple literal sense, and believe that the sages intended nothing other than what may be learned from their literal interpretation. Inevitably, they ultimately declare the sages to be fools, hold them in contempt, and slander that which does not deserve to be slandered. They imagine that they are more intelligent than the sages, and the sages were simpletons who suffered from inferior intelligence. The members of this group are so pretentious and stupid that they can never attain genuine wisdom. Most of those who have stumbled in this era are involved with medicine or astrology. How remote they are from true philosophy compared to real philosophers. They are more stupid than the first group. Many of them are simply fools.
So the first group is just people who aren't educated. The second group is people who are educated to the point that they think.
Correct.
They're smart,
the first group are from simpletons. The second group are
people who think they're smart.
Are cynics, right? Are cynics of Chazal. Group three are the people who respect Chazal, aren't willing to read literally, and therefore read
figuratively.
Yeah, figuratively, allegorically, metaphorically, take your pick. Right? Now, you would think that in the one group that the Rambam likes, he could not be cynical, but...
No.
No, this is how he starts. This is the third group. His members are so few in number that it is hardly appropriate to call them a group. This is one of my favorite lines. When I first learned this when I was in high school, I just loved this line, right? The Hebrew being, Hakat HaShlishi, right? Eino Ra'ui L'Kroto Kat, right? It's not really a group, except in the sense that one speaks of the sun as a group, or species of which it is the only member, right? In other words, this is quite pretentious, it is a group in the sense that there is one person in this group at least, and that's me, right? Right? I mean, that's what he says, right? There is one person in this group. It's a group in the sense that the sun is a group. It's one. I don't know whether he really thinks he's the only human being alive who believes this.
I'm assuming it's more of a, I can prove there is one.
And I'm
sure
just saying it comes across. Look,
he's implying that everyone else is either.
Listen, I don't read Judeo-Arabic. I don't know how pretentious this reads in the Arabic, right? I know how it reads in the English, okay? The group, but he does say men, so I'm assuming he doesn't really mean one. This group consists of men to whom the greatness of the sages is clear. They recognize the superiority of their intelligence from their words, which point to exceedingly profound truths. Even though this group is few and scattered, their books teach the perfection which was achieved by the authors and the high level of truth which they had attained. The member of this group understand that which the sages knew as clearly as we do, the difference between the impossibility of the impossible and the existence of that which must exist. They know that the sages did not speak nonsense, and it is clear to them that the words of the sages contain both an obvious and hidden meaning. Thus, whenever the sages spoke of things that seem impossible, parenthetically, this is something we'll deal with hopefully next week, not every Agadata does the Rambam think is not literal, right? It's only those that make no sense. Things that sound like they could be literal are literal, right? It's not that everything is not literal, that those which make no sense to be literal are not literal. Close parentheses. They were employing the style of riddle and parable, which is the method of truly great thinkers. For example, the greatest of our wise men, Shlomo, began his book by saying, to understand an analogy and a metaphor, the words of the wise and the riddles. All students of rhetoric know the real concern of riddle is with its hidden meaning and not with its obvious meaning. As let me now put forth a riddle to you. Since the words of the sages all dealt with supernatural matters, which are ultimate, they must be expressed in riddles and tongues. Now the Rambam adds one more point, which is, why do they do this? No, because these are things that are worthy of being hidden, right? You don't just play, you don't just present deep metaphysical truth simply all the time. That's not what we do. You write it in a hidden manner, right? That's the way the Rambam thinks about philosophy, as he explains very, very extensively in Mor Nebuchim, right? Deep philosophical things are not written clearly because not everyone is worthy of understanding. The Rambam writes this as well in the introduction, the Mishnah, he writes, and about this fourth matter, I mean to say the homily that is found in the Talmud is not fitting to think that its value is to be little and its purpose to be lacking. Rather, there's great understanding in it as it contains amazing riddles and beautiful wonders. As when one observes these homilies with intellectual observation, matters of the true good, about which there is nothing higher, are understood from them. And from them are revealed theological matters and true things that the men of wisdom would keep away and do not want to reveal. And all of the philosophers attained over the generations. Right? The Rambam said this is intentional. It's written in such a way that the real meaning is hidden because that's how you deal with really important things. Not everyone is meant to handle them. And if you glance at it according to a simple meaning, you will see matters about which nothing is farther from the intellect than them. And they did this thing for wondrous ends. So now he explains, why do they do this? One of them is to sharpen the idea of their students and draw their hearts, right? One is, it makes the people who do understand the deep truths of Torah smarter, because it forces you to work for it, right? Spoon feeding makes you dumb, right? Forcing you to figure it out yourself sharpens the mind. That's one. And the second is to blind the eyes of fools who will never illuminate their hearts. The other is, he doesn't want dumb people to understand it. So, I hide it to make smart people work harder and to make sure that unintelligent people never understand it.
to make sure people got what it is.
And if they had shown them the illumination of truth, they would have turned their faces away from them according to the shortcomings of their natures. He said, look, certain people, it's just not worth it. You show it to them, it's just gonna blow up in your face. As it is stated about them and those similar to them, we do not reveal the secrets to them because their intellect is not complete in order to accept the truths with according clarity. I cannot... Look, the Rambam is an elitist, okay? He is. He has moments where he's not, but he clearly has moments where he is. This is one of them. I cannot, there's nothing I can do to change that.
It seems like if Masnadi believed in Kabbalah, which still sounds weird.
What? Who believed in Kabbalah?
A Masnadi.
Masnadi all believed in Kabbalah.
Okay.
Well, they all believed in Kabbalah. The Gra was a Kabbalist. Rechaim Volozhin is a Kabbalist. Right? All of them. All of Misnagdim were deep Kabbalists. In fact, one of the main breaks between Hasidim and Misnagdim was how do you understand Tzimtzum? Right? Was how do you understand Tzimtzum? Assuming that Tzimtzum is true, which they both assumed, is how do you understand it?
Okay, well, like I said, I guess we're still informed.
Look, the Vilna Gaon was a very, 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 very deep Kabbalist. Right, that's what he did.
What? The idea that God pulls away from the world.
Yeah, that one.
Created.
Good.
God has to limit.
Don't ask me to explain either side of this to me.
God has to limit himself to a physical, finite world.
Oh, this is why. This is why.
What does that mean?
It's like early Masnagdim back when they were fighting the law. They were saying, oh, this is why it should be him, so we don't have, chasms.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. So anyways, and likewise, some of the sages not want to reveal the secrets of the wisdom to other sages. And they already mentioned that an honored man of the sages initiated with men who were experts in the wisdom of the story of creation, Masa Bresha, whereas he was an expert in the story of the chariot, Masa Merkava. He said to them... Okay, I'm going to skip this a little bit. He said, right, that part of it was that they didn't think that everyone's fitting to receive these deep secrets about the Torah, and he gives the example. So two paragraphs down, he says, nonetheless, they should hidden hints in writing. Right? He said, the person, therefore, the goal is to hint. And therefore, if you write in a cryptic way, so the advantage is that you have provided access to the deep truths for those who are able to perceive them, but you only did it in hints, so the wrong people don't get them, and the people who are going to get them have to work for them. Okay? Now, this highlights, therefore, two and a half ways of reading. Let's say wild agadot. Okay, well, when we discuss maybe quickly Rambam gives a little bit more of a systematic approach to how you know which type of agadot is which. But let's start with the wild agadot. Pick your favorite wild agadot. Yeah. There's no right answer here. Just pick your favorite wild one.
Yosef Ben Yosef.
We just learned today in Zavasuka that when they say, someone said that God has never come to earth, but we've said previously, and no man has ever gone to heaven.
Oh, God, the 10 Tochen thing. I don't know what that means. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, whatever. The one's like the one
Purim murder.
Yeah, what?
The one rabbi kills the other one, and then he's resurrected.
I don't even know if that. Yeah, it's sure. Bizeira and that. I don't know.
The one with Harsina,
Sure, the one with Arsinai. It's a beautiful idea. Yeah, the talking Arsinai. That's a great one. Right? All the mountains fighting. Right? That's a beautiful idea, but understanding literally is a bit much.
But I think that one, the lesson of it is actually pretty easy to come.
You know, that one, I agree with you. The lesson's pretty easy.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
But
look, they're all talking wonderful. I mean, look, the one that I think I gave the guys last year just to shock them and we were doing Avodah Zarah is the one of, Rava going to visit Bar Sheshach, who was a Babylonian officer in Avodah Zarah Samachem and Beis, and visiting him while he's surrounded by naked prostitutes dancing around. And Bar Sheshach says to Rava, do you have such beautiful prostitutes? And he says, yes, sir, ours are even more beautiful. And then the conversation goes on from there, right? If you don't think something symbolic is going on there, then I don't recognize your Judaism, okay? I don't know what...
The Jews is the Torah.
What?
I said the prostitutes of the Jews is the Torah.
I'm not sure that was the meaning of it either. What? Okay, guys.
Yes,
anyways.
I love this. I'm going to be the granddaddy.
Guys,
Guys! Guys, okay! Guys! Guys, guys, guys! Guys, okay, okay! Guys! Guys, okay! 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 Okay!
Guys!
Okay! So now we have three models. Or two and a half, three models, right? We have the literalist. Accept.
The other
literalist reject. Or. The Rambam. symbolic reading. Okay? Now, the Rambam presents it as if there is only one right answer, and it is the Rambam. However, as is usually the case,
it is slightly
with the Rambam. Wait one second. As usually the case with the Rambam, just because he divides the world into simpletons, kofrim, and me, doesn't mean that those other groups didn't actually have people who at least actually thought that and were like not stupid, right? Meaning, there were in fact Jewish thinkers who were pretty close to being literalists and people who I would not be comfortable calling simpletons. There are people who were on the cynical side of it, not in the sense that they thought Chazal were like, you know, they just threw out Chazal, but in the sense that they were pretty comfortable just saying, yeah, Chazal are wrong, or don't worry about it too much, right? There are people within the tradition who are really comfortable with that, right? So I want to show, again, not quite in the extreme way the Rambam puts it, but let's just look at it, for example. So look at number three. Reb Chafni Gaon, Reb Shmuel ben Chafni Gaon. Okay, writes as follows. Ha Haggadah. The Haggadah, right? Kol Perush Yavo B'Talmud Al Shum Inyan. Right, it's any interpretation brought in the Talmud that is not a mitzvah. Shlo yeh mitzvah, zoi agadah. It's just right, non-halachic material. Ve'ein lecha lumod mimena el shema sheyal al adat. Don't rely on anything in it unless it's reasonable. Ve'yesh lecha al adat. You should know. Shekol ma shekimu chazal halacha binyan mitzvah. Shehimim pi Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaShalom shekimu mibeg vura. Anything Chazal say halachically is a tradition from Moshe, from God. Ein lecha lo hosif alav lo legro imenu. No adding, no subtracting. Avo ma sheperishu bapsukim. Kol echad fi meshem ein lo ma sherabe dato. But whatever, you know, whenever they offered a midrashic interpretation of a pasuk, it was just whatever they felt like. Ulefim hasheyal al dat min perishim elu lom dimotam. If it makes sense to you, learn it. Vashar, the rest of it, ain't some chivaleim. Don't rely on it. So what do you see already in the Gaonim?
They're more skeptical.
Yeah, they're skeptical, right? They're not quite what the Rambam's saying. They don't throw out Chazal, say they're ridiculous. But Rav Shmuel ben Chafni Gaon is pretty comfortable with the, look, maybe Chazal did mean it literally, and you know what? Okay, so sometimes we don't listen to Chazal. Halacha, we listen to them. Non-halachic material? Whatever, take it or leave it. Right? That's definitely closer, shall we say, to the Rambam's group too. But this is Rav Shmuel ben Chafni Gaon. And you should know, this is not only Rav Shmuel ben Chafni Gaon. It is also Rav Shreira Gaon. Right, this is actually a common position to go in. So look at the next source. Amar Mar Bar Rav Shreira. This is cited in the Eshkol. Hani Mili Dinafke Mi Psukeu Mikre Midrash Vagada Dinaninu. All Midrashim are mere approximations. Yeshman Shukach goes to Rabbi Yehuda and he gives examples. And then if you skip down, he gives you a bunch of examples, and therefore he says, V'chein agadot shamru talmidei talmidim. Right, some of them are like, they're not even students, they're students of students. Right, there are some things in Midrashim that are like, you know, they're not like the main members of Chazal, they're like their students, and their students, students, and their students, students, students. It's like people in the base medrash or something. Right, they said things. Kigon Rabbi Tanchuma, Rabbi Oshia, Vizula Tam, Rubam, Enam came. Right, some of them, sorry, some of them, I take the other way around. See, some of them are students of students, those are like reliable, but not every thing. Some of them are just people. Or something like that. And therefore, we don't rely on them. What's right is supported by logic and the psukim. Fine. The agadot are just endless. Right? There is no end to agadah. Again, in the Gaonim, they're pretty comfortable with the position that what?
You can be wrong.
Yeah, like, you don't want to accept the Midrash?
Okay,
so don't do it. You know, the Ramban says this as well, right? The Ramban in the disputation. Now, admittedly, you have to take this with a grain of salt because this is a disputation, right? In a disputation with who? Christian. Thank you, Pablo Cristiani. What did he say? Right, so part of the debate with Pablo Cristiani was what?
He was trying to use the Gemara to prove
good. He's using the Gemara to either prove Jesus and things like that. So obviously in this context, the Ramban has a vested interest in
more
wiggle room in Agadah. So take it with a grain of salt. But at least what he says there, though he does say other things in other places, is he says... right, he says this. And he quotes this, that the Gemara says Mashiach already came. And then he goes back and forth through this debate where he's trying to prove it.
It also specifically says Mashiach would be in that case.
Right? Hey, whatever. I don't want to get into all the details, right? He's trying to prove that the Mashiach already came from the Gemara, okay? He goes back and forth in different ways to defend
the
Agadah.
The Gemara says that. And then says who that Mashiach was.
Yeah, fine. But look at the top of the next page. He just after the ellipsis, and he says, "Aval nolad kifi pshuto elo agadot beni mani b'kach." He said, "Okay, look, maybe something like that comes out of the Agadah, but I don't believe it, right?" So the Ramban again, there's a big discussion. I gave you an article you can look at. Obviously, the Ramban, there's a big discussion. Does he really mean this or not, right? But the point is that approach that the Rambam describes is basically heretical. In a slightly more modified version, is in fact a decently represented view in the Gaonim. Yes?
Yeah.
Right? The view that sometimes Chazal really might mean what they say they mean, literally, and it's okay to not believe it. Right? That's not as forceful as Rambam's group too, but it's definitely in that world. Okay?
It's definitely not in the third category.
Correct. Now, what about the first category? So there's a good reason to believe that there were certain people who fell somewhere in that more literalist camp. Namely, Rashi and the Balei HaTosfot. I gave you a summary from Dr. Moshe Shershan, and he writes as follows. The Ashkenazic approach, Rashi and the Balei HaTosfot. A very different approach to the relationship between Halakha and Agadah has been attributed to Rashi and the Balei HaTosfot, the leading rabbinic figures of medieval Ashkenaz, the geographic area roughly equivalent to modern France and Germany. In their commentaries in the Talmud, Rashi and Balei HaTosfot do not appear to make any qualitative or methodological distinctions between Halakhic and Agadic passages. They go straight through the Talmudic text, seeking to clarify its meaning and reconcile with other rabbinic sources. Thus, they seem to recognize the Agadic sections of the Talmud as no less authoritative than the Halakhic ones, right? I mean, the first proof that they seem to think this way is that they analyze Agadata in the exact same way and the exact same tools they do Halakha. That wouldn't be enough of a proof by itself. Don't yell at me yet. Thus, they seem to... Indeed, many scholars believe that at least some medieval French authorities, including perhaps Rashi himself, accepted at face value, even those Agadot, that describe God as having a physical body. Right? This is the most extreme, is that there were, in fact, Balei HaTosfot, or people in the Tosfot period, who were so comfortable... I take that back. Were so convinced that Agadot were meant to be taken literally, that even the most problematic literalist Agadot, namely those that describe God as having a body, they took literally.
Why are they so problematic?
Well, because it's sort of heretical.
Why? Can someone say Yigal to me?
It's heretical, according
to...
Not the whole thing, the relevant line.
See, the relevant...
The
lo demuta goof, the ain't no goof.
See, the first part about that is... That was heretical,
like,
according to the Rambam.
Good. So
an
extreme view of this was Ramosha Taku. Ramosha Taku said it was heresy to not believe that God had a body because the Pesukim say he has a body.
If God has a body, then
no,
God
it's more literalist. Limited. Stop conflating logical with literalist. Those aren't the same thing. Stop. They're not the same thing. Logic means accords with logic. That's not the same as literal.
One logic says it's heretical to believe God is omnipotent.
Not my point. My point is that literalism does not make something more logical. It just makes it more literal. Right? Logic means accords with logic. Right? Now, if you have a logical reason why God should have a body, right, that would be logical. To say that it's more logical that God has a body because that's what the psukim sound like literally is not logical, it's literalist.
It's more logical to say this heresy doesn't have a blindness, heresy.
No, not necessarily. But that depends on how you view literalism.
Heresy against logic or heresy against literal pagan attacks.
Correct.
I'm saying, you can say he has a bias. Say he doesn't have a bias.
Stop using the word logical. Logic means accords with logic.
I'm saying, I don't see a logical reason to say why is.
Okay, but if you I'm not here arguing for this. I'm noting, right, that it the question of whether to read something literally or not literally, right, is a different question of what is logical, what is illogical, right? Literalism. Okay, I'm going to let's bracket this for a second. Okay, literalism is not always the most logical way of reading any text. Okay? Lidugma.
It usually isn't.
Lidugma. It is not the most logical way of the most logical interpretation of the literal phrase is raining cats and dogs is not that felines and canines are coming down from the sky. That is the literal read. It is not the logical read, right? Literalism does not always accord with logic, right? Sometimes, obviously, it does, but it doesn't always. Okay? Close parentheses. Now. Now, what? Maybe this is what you meant to say, Yosef.
Yeah.
The next paragraph. The strength of this approach. What? Sure. The strength of this approach, right? I think Dr. Shoshan's formulation is actually very nice here, right? It's more careful. The strength of this approach is that it meets the Talmudic text on its own terms. It does not seek to impose an artificial or overly rigid distinction between halachic and agadic passages that are right next to each other on the page of Talmud. Neither does it seek to interpret Agadah through the prism of a systematic rational theology that would have been quite foreign to the authors of the Talmud. Okay? That's, I think, a fair way of explaining the rationale of Rashi and Tosfot, which is not it's logical in the sense that it accords with logic, right? But that it, in a certain sense, is more receptive to the text without an attempt to read the text with preconceived notions.
A more logical reading of the text.
It is a
literal.
It is a text.
Literal and logical.
It is a read. I'll put it differently. It is a read of the text without external preconceived notions.
Yes.
Which, here I'll add the caveat that you might be looking for. Which, if you assume the divinity of these texts, and therefore grant them the ability to be on human reason, it would not be counter-logical to read them in a way that is not intuitively logical to you, given prior assumptions. How's that for an attempt at a philosophical construction?
That's exactly what I mean.
Okay, good. Now, on the other hand, Rashi and Tosfot, it appears to demand that we accept every agadic statement, at least from the Talmud, as true and normative, just like the halachic statements of the Talmud. This is indeed a tall order. In its most radical formulation, such an approach would demand that we check our rational faculties at the door of the Beit Midrash before endeavoring to study Agadah, right? And that's really what it comes down to, is, do you think it is, right, let me formulate even more sharply. Do you think it is better or there's more integrity in an approach to the text that does not have preconceived notions? Or one that recognizes our preconceived notions as important because God gave us rationality for a reason, and therefore they should actively be used in our interpretation of texts. Right? That's really what it comes down to. Right? Is do you start by saying, what does the text tell me? Or do you recognize that there are things that you bring to a text that are legitimate that aren't mere interpretation of text or reading of text? Okay?
This is pitched to me grow up groups and said in this particular region of Israel there are 360 million people.
Sure. Okay. Now if you want a clear formulations of this, look at number 7. This is the Rosh Mishantz, who's one of the leading Bali Atosvot. He really is. All of you are like, who's the Rosh Mishantz? But according to, as right Canterfogel puts it, right, Dr. Canterfogel is one of the world experts on the Tosvot. He's one of the big three. right? After Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri, he's number three, right? He said Rabbeinu Tam, the Ri, and the Rosh Mishans are the Babe Ruth, Joe DiMaggio, and Mickey Mantle, I think, of the Bali Atosfot, is what he says. Don't ask me which one is which, because there's a logic to it, but if I understood baseball, I might get the reference. I'm more likely to figure out what the baseball reference is by knowing what I know about the Bali Atosfot than the other way around. Both, I don't know baseball, too. I'm a little bit too young for that. For those references to mean too much. I know the names. That's about it. But anyways, the Rosh Mishans from Samson of Sens, he's pretty clear, and he says, Eich Ya'aleh Alev Ish Lomar Shelo Nikach Divrei Agadah Kipshuta. I don't know if you want a more clear formulation than that. Right, I'll read that again. Eich Ya'aleh Alev Ish. How could it even enter the heart of a man, Lomar Shelo Nikach Divrei Agadah Kipshuta, to say that you should take the Agadah not literally? I don't know if you want a clearer formulation. Not literally. Shelo Nikach.
Basically, how could a person be so stupid as to ever think that?
Yes.
And to
And then after he quotes an example, he says, Ela fadai al divrei chachamim ein lohosif umehem ein legroa. Don't add or subtract from the chachamim. Now, what is the Gemara to which he refers that it is so obvious to him that it is literal? Well, the answer is number 8. Someone want to read it? My voice is starting to go. You can read it in English if it suits you. I don't care. Who wants to read number 8? Thank you.
The Gemara analyzes the missing verse. All right.
Go.
And your gates of precious stone. This should be understood in the light of the incident where Rabbi Yochanan sat and thought, in the future the Holy One, blessed be He, will bring precious stones and pearls that are 30 by 30 cubits, and He will hollow them out, a hole of 10 by 20 cubits, and set them in the gates of Jerusalem. A certain unnamed student sneered at him, saying, Now we do not find the precious stones even the size of an egg, even the size of an egg of a dove, and yet all of this we will find? After a period of time, the student's ship went to sea, where he saw a ministering angel sitting and sawing precious stones and pearls that were 30 by 30
cubits. How big is 30 by 30 cubits?
A lot.
It's anywhere between 45 and 60 feet by 45 and 60 feet.
So it's
we're
big
talking, those are big pearls. Big. We're good. It's big.
We're talking a fifth of a football field.
Yes, we're talking big.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, can
someone look up the largest, like...
Okay, I don't want to know. Keep going.
And hollowed out in them were holes of 10 by 20 cubits. He said to the angels, for whom are these? They said to him that in the future the Holy One, blessed be He, will place them at the gates of Jerusalem. Later the student came to Rabbi Yochanan and said to him, continue to interpret... To interpret the future, it is fitting for you to interpret as I saw it, just as you said. Rabbi Yochanan said to him, worthless man, if you had not seen, you would not have believed. Clearly you are mocking the statement of the sages. Rabbi Yochanan set his eyes upon him, and the student was instantly killed and turned to a pile of bones.
Yeah, so that's the story that convinces him that you should take things literally, which is that the Gemara presents something which is totally and completely radical and sounds crazy, right? But here's the thing. The Gemara seems to self-consciously, right, bring someone who says, nah, you don't mean that literally, goes and sees the angels doing it, says to Rabbi Yochanan, hey, I saw it. Right? It didn't make sense to me, but empiricism wins over rationalism. And what does Rabbi Yochanan say? Kaifer! You didn't believe it just because it didn't make sense? You needed to see it? And he dies.
Like Indiana Jones movie.
Yes, exactly. So this is the Rosh Mishans' proof that things should be taken literally.
This is like an anti-proof. This makes me not want to take things literally.
Yeah, well, you understand what he wants there.
I'm saying this story.
That's
what
he wants.
I asked Rai Katterfogel, can you pick a Gemara in which you see the Bali Atosfot or Rashi really doing this in practice, right? Understanding something literally, right? Not just saying you should understand literally, but so he said, well, here's a good one. The Gemara at the end of Tanya says as follows: Amar Ula. In the end of time, all the tzaddikim will sit around in a circle and point to God and say, this is our God. We have hoped for Him, and He will save us. We will rejoice in His salvation. Now, the Rambam, I promise you, right? That when, what? It's number 9. This is Gemara in Sana, and the last Gemara in Tainus. Right, I promise you that if the Rambam read this Gemara, what would he tell you? Allegorical. No one points at God. God isn't physical, right?
Yeah.
Look at Tosafot's comment. What does he do? Oh, whoa, point. By point, we mean with your finger.
What?
Do you understand what Tosafot is doing?
Point with your finger.
But you understand what he's doing, right? He's just like, oh, point. We mean, you know, point. Like, point.
As opposed to this metaphor.
Right? Meaning he's just like, he doesn't like make a big deal. Like, this is literally just like, right? He does what he does in every other sugya and shas, which is, let me just clarify, maybe it was unclear to you how you point, right? But you point like this, right? Which makes it sound like he's imagining them sitting around in a circle and he's saying, yes, you point like this.
I'm not sure if you hadn't figured it out, but by point we mean you should go like these.
Yes, exactly, which, right, which I happen to like the example. I think it's very like, anyways. Now, I will point out that even if you don't like the literalist view, you have two options of what to do with people who do like the literalist view. There's the Rambam's position, which is, you are heretics, right? Which is what the Rambam, or a heretic, which is what he does in 11, right? Where the Rambam says, there are these people who believe that God is physical, and they are heretics, right? Which he says, Chamishahim anikrem minim. There are five people who are heretics. And the last one, sorry, the third one is Haomer Sheisham Ribon Echad, one who says there is God, Aval Shehu Gufu Bal Tmuna, but he's physical. And the Ravid says, if we look in the middle, the Ravid, he says, look, the Lama Karel Azemin, why is that a heretic? The Kamak Dolim Vitovim Eno Chulbatu Amachshava, there were very many great people who thought that God was physical. Levi Mashrub and Mikraot. Why? Because they read the Psukim literally. Vyotemi Masharamu Ra'u Bidibri Agadot. And because of what they saw in the Agadah, for sure. Hamishab Jodin Hadeot. Which confuse you. So what does the Ravid say? He says, I totally agree with the Rambam. It's a terrible mistake to think God has a body. But how do we view the people who think God has a body because they read the Agadot and the Psukim literally? We view them as mistaken, but not heretics, right? Because the Rambam is pretty extreme. It's not just they're wrong. It's that if you're wrong, even if you're wrong because you think that the best way to read a text is literal, you're still a heretic.
You are literally a kofar.
Yes.
Anybody
you are literally a kofar because you read literal.
Anybody who doesn't believe in me is a kofar.
I saw this debate between video between Richard Dawkins and Barry Sachs. At one point, he said something about how someone who in Judaism, someone who reads text literally is a heretic. You mentioned that.
Agree in the Rambam, correct?
Yeah, he's correct.
Yes. Now. Fine. Now, I want to make a few more points before we finish. One point that will all shock you. Not all of you, but it is also obviously true. So far, all of you have jumped to the conclusion that the people who read text literally are rationalists, and the people who don't are...
irrationalists.
Yes, what did you say?
You're saying people who read text literally are rational.
And people who don't are?
Irrational.
No, people who don't read them literally... Sorry, people who read them not literally are rationalists, and people who read them literally are?
Irrational.
And rationalists, and you call them who? No, well, either Kofrim or...
Yes.
Kabbalists. That's wrong. Because who bought the Rambam's methodology hook, line, and sinker? Kabbalists. Because Kabbalists also believe that the Gemara is metaphorical. They just argue about what the metaphors stand for. Right, the notion that the deep philosophical texts are not meant to be read literally are shared. That notion is shared both by rationalists and by mystics. They just argue on how what the metaphor is or what the metaphor means. They don't argue over the fact that it's metaphorical. Right, hence, there's a very long article, which I gave you here a link to from Rabbi Chaim Eisen, where he notes that the person who systematically tried to live up to the Rambam's methodology was the Maharal, who was a Kabbalist. Right? Because the question of whether you read text literally or not is not about what you think the meaning of that metaphor is. It's simply the fact, do you think that the texts are metaphorical or literal? Right? But reading something metaphorically does not mean it's going to lead to the interpretation that you agree with. Right? Those are different questions. Right? You can be a literalist rationalist, I guess. It'd be hard. You could be a literalist Kabbalist, mystic. But you could also be a non-literalist rationalist, right? Non-literalist mystic. It doesn't matter. Right? This is simply a question of how do you read text, not what do you then do with that. Okay? So I want to disavow the notion right now that the only people who understood that you read texts not literally are rationalists. It's not true. Right? Mystics, Kabbalists did the same thing systematically. Okay? I gave you here that there is a bit of a debate what the Gaonim actually meant. Right? The Gaonim were clearly a bit of, right, we said, a little bit more free with not accepting Chazal accepting Chazal's Midrashim. There are those who think that the Gaonim really meant it. Either they meant it about all
Some interpret it non-literally.
Now some say right. Now some people think that this is just anti-Karaite polemics. Right? They don't really mean it. Maybe it's just because they don't care about anything that's not legal. It could be that they're influenced by external philosophies. That's why they believe this. The Maharal doesn't like this. The Maharal thinks that the Gaonim are saying the same as the Rambam. That when they say don't accept the Midrash, they don't mean don't accept the Midrash. They mean don't accept it literally. Right? That's the Maharal understands the Gaonim. Right? So whether the Gaonim actually say this is a bit of a... But okay. So let me just summarize what we said and then one last point, okay? The Rambam presents three models. Literalist reading, from literalist reading, right? Meaning saying, whatever Chazal say we believe, even if it sounds crazy to us, Chazal know better than us. The Rambam says, that is crazy. That's defaming Chazal. But, as we saw, there were many Balei HaTosfot who...
seem to do that.
Who, maybe not quite as extreme as that, but really do seem to take texts that the Rambam would definitely read allegorically and have no problem, at least as their given approach, to read it at least as much as possible, literally. The rationale for such thing is maybe they see right rationalist rereads as externally imposed values rather than meeting the text
also,
in its own.
It's like there isn't really a reason. I'll say
there is a reason.
Is there a particular reason to disbelieve it?
Like, yes, you think God isn't physical.
I'm saying, what's the base reason to assume
that? If you think God isn't physical, you think that's irrational.
Ah, so you're saying that if you start with the assumption that God is physical...
And then, that's what Dr. Shoshan points out, that the reason to accept a literalist read is to think that the best way to read a text is without coming with preconceived notions. Yeah. Right? At the other extreme, there's the Rambam's saying that there are people who think that Midrash means what it says it does, but have no problem rejecting it. That view is possibly... close to the Gaonic view. Again, the Maharal thinks the Gaonim just say the same as Rambam. It could be it's polemical, but at least potentially it is the Gaonim, or close to it. Right? Then there's the Rambam view, which is you should read it allegorical, at least when it doesn't make sense, based on rationality. And I noted that that style of right reading is actually accepted both by rationalists and by mystics. Right? The question of what those metaphors mean is different than the question, is this a metaphor? Okay? That's the first set of points. The next point is that even when people do read it literally, are you so convinced by your non-literal reads that you automatically say if they read it, get it wrong, they are kofrim? That's the Rambam's approach. There is the middle approach that there are people in this world who are wrong and not kofrim. I know that's a radical thing to say. If you want, later on I can explain to you. I had the privilege when I was in YU of having a chavrusa for one semester at 6:30 in the morning with Professor Mark Steiner, who is a professor emeritus of philosophy of mathematics at Hebrew U. When we were learning, he wrote a paper arguing that really the Rambam's machlokes with the Ravid is a machlokes about whether you think that the word God is a Kripke and rigid designator or a Frege, Russell, descriptive name, if you know anything about naming theory. If that means nothing to you, then it means nothing to you. If you want me to explain it to you, I'll explain it to you later. Okay? I'll explain it to you later. It's an excellent article. I think he's right, but we'll have to...
So, basically, is it this or this? Yes.
How much time do we have? What time is it?
We've got 5 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know if we have time, but very quickly, the argument of Russell is that a name is really a shorthand for a series of properties. Okay? That's how you should view a name. And therefore, if any of those properties are wrong, then you're not talking about that person anymore, because a name is a shorthand for a person with these properties. If it turns out they don't have these properties, you're not talking about them. Right? He argues that that's what the Rambam means. Right? Because he thinks God is shorthand for all these properties. If the God you're talking about doesn't have one of those properties, then you're not talking about God. Hence, you're a kofer. Kripke, Saul Kripke, argues that names are rigid designators, or essentially, names are names. Meaning, sometimes you make fundamental mistakes about who somebody is, but you're still talking about them. Right? He thinks that the Ravid thinks that the word God is a name. Therefore, you can make really big mistakes about who God is, but you're still talking about God. Okay? If that makes sense, great. If not, I need to make one more point. The last point I want to make is just the Rambam and the Mernebuchim said, right, because Agadah hides the secrets of Jewish philosophy, he wanted to write a book on Agadah and promised that one day he would write a full book on all the Agadot.
And then he didn't.
And his son, Rav Avraham ben Aramam, writes in his parish for the Agadot, that's because my father said he was going to do it, and then he got scared off, right? Velo Karav Moshe Lageshet at Al Hahar, right? He was too afraid to get close to Agadot and the secrets and writing them down, so he didn't do it, so I'm going to do it instead of him. And that's where we'll pick up.
Wow.
Next week is a little bit of Avraham Ben Aramam.
Their whole